Felicity, I would love to hear from you after the talk with Benjamin. What actually stood out to you the most?
I really love this chat with Ben today. And one of the quotes that he spoke about, which of course our listeners will hear shortly, because I'm a really big one with my career work in career confidence. And this is a guy who was bullied for 10 years at school, made some amazing career leaps. And then I said to him, where does your confidence come from? And he said this beautiful thing: confidence is something you find along the way. I thought that was really profound. Like, it's just something you build up on. And I know that when I used to work in the university sector, working with a lot of young people and many from Asian cultures, many of them struggle with that. Ben says he's an introvert. He's done a lot of things that may not come naturally to introverts, and he does amazing stuff in front of audiences, 5,000 people sometimes. And he just found this confidence, and he just really believes in himself. So that was some of the things that really stood out for me. How about you, Sam?
One of the things that I'm constantly struggling as a care, as someone who is always giving care and support to my clients, is the boundary. When do I know that I have pushed them hard enough, and when do I know that I have to give them space? And I think he shared, some golden nuggets of wisdom that everyone is at their own pace and space. So understanding that is very critical so that we can do our job very well as a career support, at the same time not burn ourselves too much. Where is that fine line to draw? So I thought that was a very good reminder for myself.
Yeah, great. All right. Well, now we'll play that interview, and we'll look forward to hearing what our other colleagues at APCDA and others think about it. So do let us know, and we hope you enjoy this conversation with Benjamin Lowe.
Hi everyone, welcome to Season 5 APCDA podcast. And with me today is my co-host Felicity, and we have the privilege with us to invite one gentleman from Singapore by the name of Benjamin Low. His career journey is really interesting. I've been following him. His journey is exciting, and I can't wait for him to share about his journey with us. Hi Ben, welcome to our podcast.
Hello, Sam, as well as Felicity. So much of a joy to be here. So I'm very thankful to have this opportunity to share with the audience. I'm looking forward to have somewhat of a robust as well as meaningful conversations with the both of you.
Thank you, Ben. So, in Asia context, especially our family upbringing, we usually have a checklist. Our parents kind of lay out our future for us even before we are born. All right. And you have a very interesting career journey that you pivoted on your own. Could you share with us a little bit about yourself, who you are as a person? What do you do? What drives you?
Yeah, so I'm not too sure whether I should start with the checklist first, or as a result of my journey, I went antithesis with the checklist. Anyhow, my name is Ben. I'm based in Singapore. I'm a professional speaker, coach, and I'm an entrepreneur as well. So what I do, I like to think, it's always this perennial question about an elevator pitch. And I think for the large part of my working years, it's always been about communications. And I started out first, my career journey was that I studied accounting. I had an offer from a Big Four accounting firm, which was really accordance to the checklist, because the funny story was that when I was in national service, because in Singapore we have to go through conscription, I would ask myself, what kind of careers do I wanted to do? And back then I was lying down on my army bunk bed and I was thinking, what kind of careers would allow me to make all the money that I wanted? And my mom was, she had a bit of influence. She was doing sales and she was selling golf clubs for a living. And she would always tell me that, you should study accounting and finance, because every month I would have to report to Mr. CFO. And he seems to have it pretty easy, right? He's just shaking his leg, he's making a good five fingers income. So that was literally how I ended up studying accounting. Anyway, the long story short and abridged was that I turned down the accounting job. I went into sales as a first career because I realized that I had at that time wanted to start up on my own. And back then, being young, rash, as well as foolish, I told myself, hey, I need to have a plan. So the first thing I need to learn is how to sell. I did corporate selling for about 1 year, and I realized that at that time, my sort of income from my side gigs equalized my day job. And I sort of went to tender. I started out my own practice in about 2014 and 15. And just at the blink of an eye, I've been doing what I'm doing for the past 10 years. I speak, train, and coach for a living. I speak across over 20 plus cities, as far as Chicago, Sydney, Riyadh, and Saudi Arabia. And I talk about communication. So I do two things I think pretty well. And what my clients pay me for, one, it's what I call in-person offline communication. So I help a lot of leaders communicate effectively, powerfully and authentically in person with large groups of people. And journey has that I also meandered my way into the life insurance space in Asia. And I also realized on that part, it's about personal branding. But if you look at personal branding, from the extensions of communication is online communications. So I realized what I really enjoy was taking out the latent, the hidden parts of ourselves and putting it out there so that the right people can see us, right people get attracted to us. So that's my like too long didn't read or too long of a bio, like for about 3 minutes.
I'm thinking, Ben, you said you sort of started out with accounting, you're going to move to Big Four. You decided not to go that way. You moved into sales and then you got into speaking, training, and coaching. Like, particularly from sales to the speaking, training, and coaching, how did you make that leap?
Yeah, so the funny leap or that link was actually through a life coaching program that I took part when I was in my 19 or 20 years old, when I was really much more formative, a lot more explorative as well. So one slice of my back history was that I mean, a couple of slices. One, I'm an introvert. So you largely not assume or associate an introvert doing an extroverted profession. So for example, at the extremes of profession, I'll be speaking to 5,000 people live in Jakarta and Indonesia. But for the hell of me, you know, I enjoy that not because of the spotlight, but because I enjoy teaching. Yet another slice of my backstory was that I had been bullied in school from 7 to 17 years old. So for a good 10 years, I was a victim of verbal bullying, physical bullying. I would just be sitting there. Going to school was really tough for me. And I think what really got me onto that path of communications was that in that life coaching program, I realized that all the pain, all the wounds I had in the past, you know, could serve for me as lessons to inspire people. It was really that perspective. But before I could do it for other people at that stage, I was just finding out myself, finding out my voice. So my life coaches then said, okay, you got to work on your life. Let's create a project. 7 weeks. What are you going to do? And I said, hey, this whole public speaking thing sounds interesting. So I'm going to develop my speaking skills first. So in a short 7 weeks, you know, I did a lot of like different competitions, different speeches. I won a couple of awards. And I realized that, hey, if I could do it for myself as an introvert, as a bully victim, maybe I could help other people. So that started out my career. And then the latter parts of my career were all really out of pure intention that, you know, if I had done something myself, then it would be only making sense that I could help other people as well.
Yeah, I can hear the intellectual rationale for it, but where does the confidence come from to do that?
Yeah, I think that's a great question, Felicity. I think I never had that confidence, in all honesty. So I think the confidence really, I think confidence is something you find along the way, right? Sometimes we think that, you know, confidence is something that you're born with. But for me, what I at least like to think about confidence from the emotional perspective of things is that there are forces and emotions that are holding us back. So if you ask me to speak on a big stage back then, there were a lot of emotions of fear, anxiety, inadequacy, but there would also be emotions that would allow me to push and ride it through. So I think for me back then, if you ask me what made me confident as a younger person, was really I told myself, what have I to lose? And I think the way we look at careers could have some like semblances as well. Like sometimes we overthink, and I think, you know, there's this like bias called spotlight effect from the psychology perspective, which is we always think that people are looking at us, judging us for the choices or the lack of, for the things that we're doing or the lack of. And I realized that when I went into doing the things I did, most of the people there are just interested in themselves. And, you know, that was a very liberating emotion. So the emotion of freedom, the emotion of trying things out, made so much more like, give me a lot more confidence back then. And over the years, as I mature, I also come to also teach this in my class. I say confidence comes from competence. And competence is the art, the ability to do something really well. So what makes me confident to teach right now, I think it's an accumulated wisdom, experiences, success, and a lot of mistakes. Because, you know, in the whole playbook of things, I probably have done a lot more things than my students. And I have been able to at least come to a steady state of performance. And that's why I think these days, what makes me confident is about competence. I can do this really well. So I think that's where, if it makes sense, the whole journey of, like, quote unquote, this word called confidence.
Yeah, I think it makes perfect sense. And it's true that confidence comes from engagement. I'm also just very curious that at the early start of your career, it's easier to, perhaps it can be quite easy to put aside the noises from other people, but it can be really tough to put aside noises, especially if it comes from your loved ones, right? And in your own words, I remember one of the posts that you shared, you say that your parents thought that you are career suicide, right? You make a move. So how do you overcome that, you know, the closest people to you? It must be really challenging. Can you walk us through?
I can't recall exactly where I heard this, and I may butcher this, but I think it's something along the lines of, like, something I read on social media. Sometimes the people who love us the most may also fear for us to succeed in ways that they may not accept. Okay, sometimes the people who love us the most may also, on some ways, fear that we may succeed in ways that they cannot accept. And I don't say this from an egotistical angle. It's not that, like, my mom, my wife back then wouldn't want me to win. And I think from that one layer first was really first, I from a very young age, I realized that everyone would have their preconceived notions of what it means to succeed, to do well, to be good in life. And I felt that, yes, you know, while so insofar that intentions were good, like, for example, when I turned down my big four accounting job to do sales, my mom was thinking, like, why do you do something so silly, right? Like, you have a stable job, you could go into the big four. It's a position that is, you know, like, if you don't rock the boat, you pretty much could get somewhere in life. But I asked myself again, like, you know, where was my mom coming from when she had those concerns and conversations of, like, hold back? So I think that was one, you know, like, at least on the logical angle. So I'm a thinker, so I think a lot, right? But on the emotional part, I think, like, what Felicity has alluded to, I think was really giving a lot of constant assurance that, mom, I have a plan. I believe I know what I'm doing. I'm not just going into it alone or naked. I'm getting, like, good mentorship from good people like Felicity, from Samantha, who has walked the path. You know, they've done something. You know, I'm having a lot of plan. So I think over the years, they learn to probably realize that, one, it's really tough to try to persuade me because I usually have a mind of my own. So I decide first and then I would tell them afterwards. So most of the times, you know, they will only realize, oh, You decided to do that? You didn't tell me? But yeah, I mean, depending on the major decisions. Number two, I think I over the time, I also feel that it's important for me in the different roles I play as a son, as a husband, or back then as a fiance, to create, you know, like, conversations of assurance to let them know that, you know, I'm not going to sort of, like, abandon my ship. I'm not going to do my job as whatever I'm supposed to do on a role-based kind of angle. I'm still loving her as her fiance. So I think it's always about letting people know, especially your close ones, in career pivots, in career changes, your thoughts. I think sometimes we have it on our own to just, like, navigate through, but careers are never like parenting, right? We always say parenting, it takes a village to raise a child. And I think, you know, for careers as well, we forget the fact that we take a village for you to develop yourself in your career, for you to flourish, because there's only that 8 hours that we're going to be on a career mostly. But what happens after the 8 hours, right? In terms of our mental space, our emotional support, our spiritual anchors and whatnot. And I think I appreciated that, you know, at least my parents and my loved ones didn't go out there to stop me. They just had the concerns. So I had it easier, to say the least.
Very interesting. Thank you for sharing. I don't think it's an easy journey. I think you definitely have put in a lot of effort to harness, to build on that relationship, to have at least instilled the level of trust that though while they are concerned, they still trust that you know what you're doing. So
I
think
hope
that
so.
is some, yeah, I think that's something that you probably did very well during that critical moments.
Yep.
Yeah, ask for forgiveness later is
Yes,
what you were
do
doing
first and
there.
then ask for forgiveness later, because I think it's very Asian to ask first and not do it any old how. So there's not even a chance or choice for forgiveness. So I'm a bit of like a rebel child back then growing up, because again, in my family dynamics, I was the only boy. So in my growing up years, you know, I was being favored as well as favoritized. I had it easier, but I wouldn't say, you know, like what has worked for me may work for everyone else as well.
Yeah, I got a question about something you said a little bit earlier. You talked about what it means to succeed is individual. And I wonder, what does it mean to succeed for you?
It has always been a dynamic equation. So I think for me in this, when I was starting out, what it means to succeed was really to just climb the ladder, and in the role of a speaker and coach, really to work with the clients that I always dreamt of working with, to get into experiences that I've always, you know, put it on my bucket list, to publish that book that I wanted to. So I published my first book at 27 years old. It was entirely self-published, crowdfunded. And a lot of the goals were very egotistical, as most young people would be, right? Because they say the youth is always wasted on the young. But I think for me, success these days is really being useful as a person. And in whatever spaces I go into, whatever context I'm a part of, with whatever kind of involvements I have, I try to consciously ask myself, you know, like success for me is in my net contribution, in my net involvement in this place or space or time, have I made the context a lot richer, a lot better, a lot more forwarded? And if yes, I give myself a pat on my shoulder. So that's really what I feel at my season, my life is to be useful, right? So have I been of relevance to the people I'm serving?
Great. And you did, of course, allude, like we all do, we make mistakes.
Yeah.
Are you open to sharing any that you have
Ooh.
really learned from?
Mistakes and from which front? Professional, personal front, which one is just...
Probably more professional, I guess, and maybe
Yeah.
if they're related to your career, so much the better.
Yeah, for sure, for sure. So one of the classic stories I shared was when I was a communications coach and trainer back then. And I always share this like in my classes as well, because back then when I was young and hungrier as well as more foolish, I was on the entrepreneurial Kool-Aid. So it's like, you know, when an opportunity comes to you, you just say yes. And I took on a training assignment where I felt that, you know, technically, objectively, skill-wise, it was far beyond me. So I had to coach a group of like Australian CEOs who came to Singapore for a public speaking training, right? CEOs, eight-figure firms, you know, they're running firms with eight figures in terms of revenues, and to learn from me of all people. And what happened was that, you know, I wasn't that mature or that developed back then. And I could recall, you know, the long and short of that, they came into the training room in Singapore, and there were eight of them. I instead of doing what I was trained to do, I started to feel deep sense of inadequacy. I felt like, wow, like I just wasn't good enough. Like, who am I to train these CEOs? And as they were coming in, the inadequacies came up, all the negative voices in my head, they were all eating into me. And what I realized that is, you know, I tried to overcompensate for my inadequacies by talking so much about myself. I lost them. Three went out to the outdoor patio to have a chat. Two went to the back of the lovely meeting room to enjoy cannabis. And then the remaining three were just with me on their Blackberries and on their laptop. The assignment didn't go well. Like eventually, what was meant for a 1 hour engagement, by the half hour to the 40th minute, they eventually walked out on me. Except for one, right? That one CEO was the company that actually contracted me. So, you know, he couldn't leave anyway. So I went over to him and I said, like, it would not make sense for me to accept the training fees for work that I did not do or did not do well. So I'm going to write a refund check to refund entirely, you know, the fees for this training to him. And that was one incident that reminded me that I think in this whole entrepreneurial culture, I mean, the hustle to, you know, just like say yes. First, I think there's beauty in saying yes. Don't get me wrong. But I felt that that was one career mistake that I sometimes remind myself that, you know, it's a conscious reminder. Do you have too much on your plate, right? And more is not more. Sometimes less is more, like for me at least, to focus on the very people that I'm most relevant to, the very commitments that I'm most invested on, to really, again, back to that question on success, have I been useful? So in that context, I wasn't useful at all to them. Like I probably was a waste of the time. But in that aspect, that got me to really be conscious as a teacher, as a trainer, as a coach. Because everyone is investing their world's time with you, you ought to make value for them. So that was one incident, one story I always like share and also remind myself.
Sounds very humbling.
Yeah.
Indeed.
Yeah.
Yeah, I have a question to follow up as well. You mentioned about, you know, success. What success means to you at this point in time is, are you of value? You know, are you supporting someone? So we have a lot of career practitioners in this podcast, and we are in the line of serving and helping. But sometimes it's so hard to draw that boundary. You know, how do you measure you have actually supported? And when do you know it's time to say, okay, that's that? Right.
Yeah,
how do you do that?
I think that's a very important and yet very tough question, Samantha. I think in your jobs as career educators, career mentors, career coaches, it's always the conversation between like are you giving your all versus is your all or it's part of it what they really need, right? So what we give versus what they need. And I mean, I have some thinking around that, which is, I think as a coach or as coaches or teachers, we always want to give our all. We'll pour our hearts out for our coaches. We start to research for them. And I guess in your work, it's about finding their LinkedIn, you know, seeing their career trajectories, helping them to ace interviews, yada, yada, yada. And I think on the flip side, I've also learned better that it's always very important to arrive where people are at. And I feel that the beauty about life and career is that sometimes, you know, people would take their own spaces and paces. In that, like, for example, if we want people to tangibly and objectively succeed in this whole career coaching context, they got to land a job. But what if they are not prepared for that? They don't want that. They know they don't need that even, right? So I feel sometimes coaches take it a bit too hard on themselves. One that, you know, we are not able to shift or create the tangible value for people. But yet I also learned better over the past few years that, again, what you think you have done or not done may not be exactly what people are registering. Like you've been a great coach for them. Like you created listening for them. You inspired them. You got them to start thinking. So while tangibly they may not have moved or gotten the job or sort of like the career trajectory that they need or want, maybe in that space of time, it's really growth for them. So I think for me to really summarize is really to make sure that you got to be a bit kinder to ourselves. I mean, that's a message for myself as well. And people move at different spaces. So sometimes even though it's not a big shift, but if it's a major shift for them internally, I think that's also a good job done already.
All right, I want to ask a question around your most important career decision to date.
It's hard for me to point it. I think instead of like sort of like framing it as a decision per se, because I think when we look at career decisions per se, it's very factual and it's very milestone based. You know, like that career, that jump, that move to Australia, that move to go into a certain territory. I think those are meaningful as well. But I think for me, if I were to ask myself, when was the most important career moment for me, was really during my time as a professional speaker and teacher. So back then, I trained people to do this whole public speaking thing. But also, as I stepped onto bigger stages, there was immense pressure to nail it and to do it well. So a bit of context here, yeah? As a keynote speaker, you are easily paid, you know, quite handsomely in 4 to 5 digits even for a 1-hour speech. And for me back then when I was growing up as a speaker, I couldn't do that very well because, you know, it was a whole entire paradigm as well as identity shift, because I was comfortable being a workshop trainer. You know, when you give me a class for 8 hours, you know, I can slowly build rapport. But when you go up on the keynote stages for 1 hour or 45 minutes or 30 minutes, you got to be a lot in that short instant. You got to be a good storyteller. You got to be a showman. You got to get people laughing. You got to get them inspired. You got to get them to act. And at that time, I feel, you know, I was in that stage of discovering myself. And what was not so, and I'm unashamed to say, you know, I would used to always look at all the professional speakers I admire. I would be very judicious to take down their notes, their opening lines, the jokes, and I would just mimic. And for the longest time, it didn't feel me. I even started to dress like them, like wear the color of suits that they wore. And I felt that that was classic imposter syndrome, except for the fact that I was really being an imposter. And what was the most defining career moment for me was that I decided, you know, this whole like my Zoom wallpaper was like, choose yourself. I decided to choose me. Like I'm not the most entertaining person. I'm not the most flamboyant speaker. I'm not the most like well put together, well chiseled person out there. But when I step up onto my stage and I started to talk more about my stories and what that meant for my audience, I started to use my ways of looking at the world. I started to weave in the way I would support my clients, my own unique perspectives. As a speaker back then, things started to change. So I started to not have all the ovations at all, you know, but I would have people to come to me and say, hey, no, I was really moved by what you shared just now. I saw how you had a lot of courage to talk about how when you put yourself out there on online, on social media, there's also fear and anxiety for you even at your stage of doing it. So I felt that, you know, for me, that most defining career or most important career moment was I intentionally chose myself and I put myself into the things I taught or teach people. And that shifted my entire paradigm. And that got me to different stages, different people, different places, different contexts that actually started to resonate me. So one of the things I do share in my keynotes is the world will not celebrate you until you first learn to celebrate yourself. And interestingly, when I started to identify, choose the parts of myself that were most relevant and celebrate those, that also gave people a lot more strength to see that greatness in them and then to put it out there. So I'm not sure how to answer your question. Like, it wasn't a decision for me, per se, like a career decision, but it was like a moment in time.
No, I like the way you talked about most defining career moment. I might even change my question for future for that. Yeah. So thank you for that answer. Sam, over to you.
No, I just find that the whole time Benjamin was speaking is so mesmerizing. It's very powerful messages that he has been sending. And I'm also very curious to learn from Ben, you know, what's next for you in your next stage or next phase of your life? Because you have went through so much, overcome so much, and gained so much at the same time. So what is lying ahead of you right now? What's keeping you excited?
Yeah, so I think it's like what Felicity has asked me about success. So it's back to that whole notion of being useful, right? So I think for me right now, after years of slogging, I've gotten some positions of quote-unquote leverage as well as success. I've been able to do a lot more. So for example, I'm consulting one of the top three life insurers in Singapore to really support the agency force and the leaders at hand. So for me, I realized that, you know, what's next for me is not so much again from the, oh, I want to play the bigger game, but it's more like I have to play the bigger game because I realized that like the ways that got me here in terms of serving people one-to-one, one in a small group, it's not efficient. It's not able to create the kind of like change I want to. So that was also what started out, you know, to set up a team that's straddled across Philippines and Indonesia. I have a team of 8 staff that helps us to grow our brand, our work through and via social media. So what's next for me is really to amplify what I believe I can do for people in Asia. I largely celebrate and an awareness of the fact that people and a lot of us growing up in Asia, we are not taught to talk much about self. And I say Asia loosely as well, because I know sometimes in Australia, there's the tall poppy syndrome as well. In different parts of Europe as well, people are not taught to sort of like talk about themselves. But largely because I'm an Asian in Asia, I see so much value and so much potential in people here, because, you know, we've been taught to just like bury our heads, to do the work. why don't we just like rise up? Why don't we just let people know of our existence? Because one of the things I shared in one of the earlier podcasts as well is that this world doesn't function or work on sympathy. It's not that because like Ben is good and I see that, oh, he needs opportunities and he's been quiet and I'm going to sort of like sympathize and give him some projects or some attention, you see. This world works on confidence. And the unfortunate thing is that the world we live in, the confident ones are sometimes the loud ones, right? And the loud ones are sometimes not the people who are used to this loudness. Whereas a lot of us who are in Asia, we do our work great, but we're not trained to be loud in the rooms or spaces that matter. Then we are always compromised, we are always sidelined, we're always ignored. So the net of that is, I think what's next for me is really helping us in this part of the world to speak up, speak out, whether offline or online, so that, you know, when you put yourself there boldly, courageously, as well as loudly, then the world sees you and then you have the opportunities to then do your work well as a leader, as a professional, in whatever context you are, so that that will then give you more opportunity to serve. And in you doing so, you get better at what you're doing. So that's really my intention, not too clear, but still distilling.
I can start to have an image, you know, when you are describing it, I can start to see a picture of Benjamin, you know. And if I were to put three words on this image, or if you have the power to let people put three words on this image, what would that three words be?
You mean like in the work I do with people, or is it for my end audience?
Correct. So when someone thinks about Benjamin and he's helping, he's useful for us in what would be that three words? What would be the legacy three words?
Yeah. So it's interesting. I recently ran a personal branding workshop for a banking client in Singapore, and I asked them to do that exactly that. So it's uncanny how, as I asked for my students to do this, I'm asked to do it for myself. So I imagined them to, you know, draw out a picture or an image of what it means for them to live out their vision. So again, for me, my vision, because I had to show them as a teacher first, was about a young boy who was holding a little lamp or a little sort of like a dim candle lit or candle fire that lit up the lives of a village. So for me, the three words that would always resonate for me is light, because it takes courage to light yourself up in darkness, in dark places. And the world has a lot of darkness and dark moments and reasons for us to just not care, not be aware, and just bury yourself. So one, I think it's light. Number two, I think it's for me to also create impact, because as you light yourself up, people's life will get lightened up and lit up, and in them doing so, you know, it's like a ripple effect. So I've really enjoyed like to see how my students and my clients, as a result of putting themselves out there courageously, they get more opportunities, they become impactful leaders, they help the people that they're meant to help. And then the third thing I would say is the third word is father, because I have a 4-year-old at home, and I think, what's the use if I'm like sort of like creating moments of impact for others, but I'm not sort of like inspiring my child? So fatherhood as a journey has been instrumental. It's been life-changing, because it gets me to really reflect constantly to say, as I do for all the others outside in training rooms and on stages, when I hit home, am I holding that light for my son as well? So I think that's the third and most important moment for me.
I know your son's only 4.
Yeah.
But when he gets a bit older, like what's going to be your career advice for him?
It's a bit unorthodox. But I'll say like career advisors, I think one of the things is care less about what people think of you, right? Care less about what people think of you, because I think most people are also figuring themselves out. And the more energies we put that are trapped in the perspectives and perceptions of others, means that we are not having that energy that could be otherwise claimed back and to invest it into yourself. And if there's one lesson that I wish I learned earlier, is that really, really just the more you choose yourself, the more you work on yourself, then the more you can then arrive at wherever you need to. So that's one of the most unorthodox, well, it's not really unorthodox, but care less, right? Just care less, care about yourself more, not in a selfish manner, but as you work on your own garden, right? Like imagine like we are always chasing flowers and bees and butterflies out there, but work and flower and water your own garden. So when your own garden blossoms, then you will then attract the beautiful butterflies, the bees, the honey into you. And then you can then do the great work that you're meant to do. So it's really about that whole conversation of not so much of a selfish pursuit of your own personal grandeur, but it's your very intentional and chase of you becoming the person that you were meant to be. And I think if we are all being able and empowered to be the person that we want to be, in us doing so, then we also, again, create the permission as well as the inspiration for the people that we want to help as well.
What a beautiful word picture. And I think it relates back to what you said earlier. We overthink, we think people are judging us, but they're not. They're busy about themselves. So look after yourself. And it's a bit of that law of attraction as well by the sounds.
I don't have any other questions. I think
I think we can just do a bit of a closing. We can edit out the break there, but maybe just go to a bit of a closing and thank Ben, Sam, and then you can jump off the call, Ben.
Okay. So thank you so much. I'm just one last question though. Do you all want me to share anything that's more concrete? Because I realize for the past 30 minutes, I've been, how should I say, in that state and space where I'm sharing a lot more metaphorical ideas, a lot more energy, a lot more, I would say, you know, the not so practical things. So if you all want to have one more question on like practical stuff, I'm happy to. But if you all think it's good, I'm good as well. Do you all want to? I'm happy to share, you know, the how to, the what to, if it's of any value to your audience.
I think it's all right. I mean, unless there's something burning you want us to ask you, just tell us what that is and we'll ask you.
Nothing in particular.
No, that's all right. I think all good.
Yeah.
Maybe Sam, maybe you also, do a bit of a,
yeah. Probably I also like to, I mean, before we go into it, I was also asking, I also was thinking if anyone who is interested to reach out to you to learn more about what you do, maybe you can give us a little bit of context about that.
Okay. So I think if you're interested to follow a bit more of my perspectives and the things I've shared in terms of communicating effectively in person to larger stages or even online to the world around, I'm reachable via Instagram, LinkedIn. Those two are the majority, kind of like the predominant platforms I'm on. So I'm happy to always share and give more.
All right. Thanks, Ben. I will definitely be reading your post, and I actually will be very interested to get your book as well. Sure. I didn't know you authored a book.
Authored one. I'm working on my second one this year.
Okay, cool. All right. All the best for your
Thank you, Sam,
upcoming
and Felicity.
And yeah, let us know when your book is out. Let me know when your book is out. I would definitely like to have a copy of that as well.
Definitely. We'll do. I'll send it to Felicity in Australia as well. All right. Thank you so much, ladies. Have a good one. I will just take a bit of time to decompress before my next podcast. Stay safe, stay well. Take care.
You too.
Yeah,
thank you very much, Ben. Bye.
Bye.